Chief Red Fox, how long have you been in this region?
Since 1934.
Could you briefly elaborate on your life, you know, your childhood, your youth?
I was born in the Dakota Territories on the 11th day of June 1870 at Thunder Butte, 19 years before South Dakota became a state. I was 6 years and 14 days old, 9 miles from where the Custer's battlefield was. The next day, on the 26th of June, 1876, my mother and father went to Canada, and I was returned back to the Standing Rock Indian Reservation, where I went to school at Fort Yates in 1877. The year of 1877 to 1879. Then I went to Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania, where I graduated in the class of the year of 1889. And from then I went to Washington, and then back to the reservation and become a clerk on the Standing Rock Indian Reservation in the Indian Bureau, then back to Washington, and in 1893 I joined the Buffalo Bill Circus and toured with them to 98. In 1898 I went in the United States Navy, and from then I stayed in the Asiatic for 4 years. In 1902 I was paid off, went back to my home on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, remained there a few months, and then returned back to the University of Wisconsin, where I studied for 2 years, law, and then returned back with the Buffalo Bill Circus in 1904, and remained with them to 1908. I toured Europe from 1904 to 1908, and I went with the 101 Ranch Wild West Show from 1908 to 1910. I went into movies and I made 107 pictures, and I stayed in movies to 1932, a year or so before I come to Corpus. And I made 107 pictures. I've toured the public schools all over the United States, and 62 years ago, this month, I organized the first troops of Boy Scouts in the city of Atlanta and then Birmingham, Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama, the Boy Scout troop that I organized there has never lost their charter. Remain Troop 1 for 62 years is still going. I worked in the Boy Scout camps. I built the first Boy Scout camp in Texas, the Letcher Starks of Orange, Texas. It was upon the Sabine River. In later years, I worked big time vaudeville in the theaters, and then traveled throughout the United States in public schools. And then with the Rice Packing Company, the largest meat packers in the United States, and I'm just retired from Wilson's meat packing company, but I'm not retired because I'm on the TV. I'm 6 times on Johnny Carson's show, on Virginia Graham's show, on Merv Griffin's show twice, on Steve Allen's show, and all the local stations throughout the United States on the West Coast and East Coast. And I sit in my room, and also down at the Downtowner. I broadcast to Boston, I broadcast up into Canada, and I just came back from London, England, where I was on the BBC there, and on the Blue Peter programs, and then I went to Toronto, Canada a few weeks ago. I was on the CBC radio programs there, and I have a number of more programs that I'm still contracted with. I live good, I take my exercises, I do my push-ups yet that many of the people see me on the TV do. I do 10 push-ups, I do physical ed, which I notice in our public schools are getting a very little bit of that today. They should get more calisthenics. Half their children are so tired that they go to sleep sitting in their seats, listening to the teacher. I'm surprised at the American boys, and I'm ashamed of them. I'm really ashamed of them. There they let the girls bring the honors back. 7 medals from the Olympic Games, and they only received a tin one, which was a brass or something. They didn't get gold or silver. I'm ashamed of the youth of our country. But don't watch out, the Negro's going to take all the athletics over because of being some of the best baseball players today, and also track men, and also basketball. Our white boys and Latin Americans, and we used to have great Indian athletes, and the world's greatest athlete was an Indian, the one that won every honor over about 27 or 28 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, Jim Thorpe. But my, now you say to him, why don't you go out and play football? Why should we go out there and get roughed up? That's what the Indian boys tells me. I think where we make one great mistake, I think we should spend more valuable money on the elementary schools in the United States, because I've been in more school systems, I think, than any man in America. And I find out that the foundation of education, which I learned more in my first 4 grades in school, my foundation of arithmetic, spelling, and reading, and that there, before I ever got foolishness in my head, like a lot of them do today, where they don't get enough, the smaller children, they crowd up with 2 sessions a day, and one teacher can't develop a child's mind in 3.5 hours. It takes 5 hours. And when they go to work and have these 2 sessions, and spend millions of dollars in our high schools, and in the pool age, as I call them, because they don't know what they're doing, half of them, in the high schools today. And that's the truth. The high school, the pool age. Let us get the younger children build a home life for them. You see, as I wrote an article once, give this a thought about for the parent teachers, and I said you don't go to the right sources when there's misunderstanding between the pupil and the teacher. You either rush to the Board of Education, or go to the newspaper office, or go down to the radio or TV stations with your complaints. They only hear one side of the story. Your precious angels may be at home, but they're little devils when they get in school.
Chief Ed Fox, do you, during your youth period, recall being involved with such prominent people as McKinley?
I met President William McKinley, and as I sat in my room and listened to the TVs today, and all the billions of dollars that these politicians are spending on themselves, I think President William McKinley never left Canton, Ohio, to campaign for his presidential against Bryan in 1896. I met William McKinley in Canton, Ohio, and the same day that I met William McKinley, I met one of the greatest, I think, the men that we should look up to and have a monument for him, because he has given us finer ways of living than any other man in the world, and that's Thomas Edison. His electric. Look at all the powers. Today you couldn't run your automobiles. You couldn't go to work and have your air conditions. You couldn't have your TVs. You couldn't have your radios and many of the things, your washing machines and all like that that Thomas Edison created. And I met Mr. Alexander Bell and Mr. Watson when there was only 25 telephones in the city of Newark, New Jersey. And you know, he was the one that, Thomas Edison is the one that created the first words you say over the telephone. Hello. Edison said that. Watson and Alexander Bell said to one another, do you hear me? Are you there? And that's the way they used to always say before Thomas Edison started that hello. Are you there? Do you hear me?
Chief Red Fox, how did you get your name, Chief Red Fox, or to be called Chief Red Fox?
My Indian name is Toklalaluta, T-O-K-A-L-U-L-U-T-A, Toklalaluta, translated to Red Fox. Now, my grandfather, my mother's father, belonged to the Red Fox clan. That is a social, like you would have the Masons or the Elks or the Knights of Columbus or something like that. And we taken, I received my name after the clan of my grandfather's. And when I went to school, they gave me the name as William to keep records straight and bare, because there was a Charles Red Fox and there was a Frederick Red Fox. And then in 1904, I was elected as the 5th District Chief of the Sioux Nation. We do not inherit in chieftainship. Anybody tell you that his chief of all of his people is untrue. We have 54 chieftains of the Sioux Nation. We have 10 divisions of the Sioux, and I'm an Ogallala Sioux. A Sitting Bull was a hunkapop, and our Sitting Bull was not a chief. He was a medicine man. His right name was Jumping Badger. And my uncle, Crazy Horse, who defeated Chester, his real name was Little Curly. And my great-grandfather, his name was Crazy Horse. He was a holy man of the Black Hills.
What was your most important role in the Indian Reservation?
Well, I was a clerk in the Indian Department, but I've been on the advisory board of my people for many years, but not anymore. The younger Indians are taking it over. I think that we're the forgotten people. It would be far better to give the Indian the self-government which they wanted, and also instead of this rehabilitation program, which is a very fine thing, if they have the right kind of leaders in it, but many of them are just for the salary and they have no interest in the Indian. And I've been trying to get, and I have received from five big industrial corporations that has places on the reservations. The Indians wants to stay at home. They want to be self-supporting. They do not want to be dependent on anyone. As the people think that we're on relief because we get money from the government. Every dollar that we receive from the United States government is revenues from minerals, gold, ore, coal, lead, zinc, and lands that have sold to states that was under the treaties of our country. And the Interior Department acts as the guardian for us, but all Indians don't receive that. It's the only Indian tribe that has that mineral rights, the timber rights, on their land.
Did you take part in the in any of the wars, the Spanish-American War or World War One?
I was in the Spanish-American War in the United States Navy. I was aboard the Rolla, which was commanded by Commander Wally. I was in the Battle of Manila, what was wasn't much of a battle at that time. The Spanish guns couldn't fire very far. Admiral George Dewey and the fleet steamed in on the first day of May 1898. In 3 hours and a half, the American flag was up where the Spanish flag was on Fort Cuadro Español in the walled city.
Previously, you mentioned that you had made or filmed 109 motion pictures. 107, I'm sorry. Motion pictures. Do you recall any of the actors or actresses that were with you?
Yes. I worked with real actors, not none of these Sears Roebuck actors, which we have today. I worked with Richard Dix in The Covered Wagon, with Richard Dix in The Vanishing American, Lois Wilson in The Vanishing American, Noel Berry in was in The Vanishing American, McGregor. In A Covered Wagon was Ernest Torrance, Alan Hale, Lois Wilson, Warren Carrigan. I starred in those pictures. They were the largest westerns ever made. There were 10 reelers. Then I worked with William S. Hart, I worked with Jack Holt, and many of the old-timers that people don't know today. William Duncan, Myrtle Stedman, Catherine Williams, Brant Washburn, many, many, Bronco Billy, Gilbert Anderson. I only see one of the old-timers when I was out in California a few weeks ago. I only met one of the old-timers out there, and that's William Farnan, Dustin Farnan. William was brothers, and I worked with them in the picture of The Score Man. I worked in many of them. I made the first movies on the Pacific Coast in 1910, where Culver City is today, with the barley field. Thomas H. Hinch was our producer and director, and we called ourselves the Bison 101. Then it went from there to the Universal Bison. Carl Emley bought the company. We then called ourselves the Broncos and KBs, then went to the Triangles, then went to Paramount. I never worked for Metro or none of them. I worked for Paramount mostly all my latter years.
Chief Red Fox, what did the Indian have to offer to their people that was of value?
What did Indians have to offer their people that was of value?
The value?
What did
Well, we had many valuable things, you know. The white race, European race, has always made millions on the things that we had to give. You just think of your corn, your beans, your pumpkins, your squash, your rutabagas, your parsnips, your turnips, your cranberries, and then the vegetable, medicines, of the herbs that came from South America, your coffee that came from South America, your cocoa that came from South America. The people who they call Mexicanos today are pure Indio. Whenever they're mixed with the Spanish and the real natives of the country that name Mexico, they're mestizos. They're not a pure Latin American, and they're not Spanish. Take the word Mexico. How did that come about? As I found out, the University of Mexico, which was one of the highest rated universities on this Western Hemisphere, the professors down there told me there was an Aztec war chief under Montezuma by the name of Mehita. And when Cortez landed in 1517 at Veracruz, all they heard, the natives there wouldn't do anything for him, and they would say Mehita. And they call that Mexico. And the natives of the Aztecs and the Toltecs and the Chimamapecs and many other people down there, instead of being called Indio, they were called Mexicanos. Now, how did the word Canada come about? Quejinedo. In the Cree Indian language, it means a land between the sunshine and the snow. And they call themselves Canadians. And how did American, these people call themselves American, there's only one American, and that's the Indian. All the rest of them are citizens of the United States of America. They were named after America's first Pusik. And Columbus discovered America. That's funny to me. He landed on the island of San Salvador, San Domingo, and Cuba. I believe he did go down along the Costa Rica coast, but he never settled in that part of the country. There was the Mandans up in North Dakota tells, and what you can see up amongst those people, blue-eyed and blonde-haired Indians, and many of their words is Welsh. They claim that there was Welsh fishermen in the year of 600. Now, I don't say that to be the truth. I don't know, only what they tell me that settled there. And the Mandans, lots of them are blue-eyed and blonde-haired Indians.
A few minutes ago, you mentioned something about herbs being offered to the people. Did the medicine man really cure those people?
The medicine man was like a judge. We had five medicine men, and they sat in the council just like the jury sits in your court. Whenever the three out of the five rendered the decision, that was it. The medicine men weren't witch doctors. That's movie stuff. They're coming rattling and jumping up in the air and whooping and hollering. They were advisors. Sitting Bull was the medicine man. The women did the doctoring. The women delivered all the children. The women did not do all the work, like people says, the hard labor work. The Indian woman provided around the village, and she governed the village. She governed her home, not her husband. He was a hunter, and he was a warrior. She provided around her home while he was away, and when he returned back, he had his burdens to do the same. He had to make his war implements and everything like that. They didn't have any industrial plants to make them. They had to make their own arrow shafts. They had to make their own bows and arrowheads. And everybody had the equal ways of living. And the reason why the Indian women carried all the burdens on their back on their journeys traveling, it was to give their husbands the freedom of their arms and things like that in case if the enemy were to make an attack, which many times going across the plains, other tribes of Indians would rebel and fight against them. And they were free to fight.
How do the Indians get their names?
They name after the things that God created or the socials that their ancestors belonged to, like the stars, the moon, the clouds, and things. We believe in a supreme creator. You call him God, we call him Wakanda, the spiritual power, the creator of all. We did not worship the sun because we looked to the sun. That was the smiles of the Great Spirit. If that sun didn't shine upon this earth and shine upon you and I, we wouldn't exist. We made many sacrifices and were very religious in our ways, more so than some of them that call themselves Christians today. They go to church 1 hour and they fight with their wives a minute to get home.
Chief Red Fox, how much do you remember about the Wounded Knee Massacre?
Well, I was 20 years old at the time of Wounded Knee. I was in Washington, D.C. when that occurred, but I was there a little later, and I talked to many of my friends and my schoolmates and all, and they related the Wounded Knee to me, which you will find in my book, The Wounded Knee, The Ghost Dance, what was caused by Wohawka, a Paiute Indian in 1888, and the ghost dance was a religious dance. It was not a war dance, but North and South Dakota just become a state, and the people didn't want immigration out there to settle on that land, and they went to work and caused that misunderstanding. The 7th Cavalry, they lost their true flag at the Custis fight, and the only way they could regain it was by whipping the enemy that took it from them, captured it from them, and they held a grudge against us for the revenge of Custer, who was a man who killed 62 women and children in 1868 on the Washita River and committed assault on a 14-year-old girl, Black Kettle's daughter, and kept her in as his mistress all winter, and she gave birth to a baby by him by the name of Yellowbird.
What was the significance of the sun dance?
The sun dance was a dance that I'd been sick. I'm an old age Indian. I've been sick. And I sing a chant to the Supreme Creator to give me life and let me live and strength to see the blackberries bloom and ripen. And in the month of August, at the full moon, I go to the sacrifice ground, and I make my sacrifice of fasting, and then I dance. When I place that prong in, not into my meat, just under my skin, of my chest, or in the muscles of my arms, we dance, and as the sun goes down, we stretch on that, and those prongs pull out, and we lean over if it's in our chest and let the drips of that blood drop upon the earth or come from the muscles of our arm like when they crucified Jesus with the thorns in his hair, with the nails in the palms of his hands and then his feet. His blood dripped upon the earth and he made that sacrifice to save the people of today. And it was a sacrifice of prayer, a dance.
Do you still believe in the Great Spirit?
Why shouldn't I? It's only a different name. You call him God, we call him Wokanda, the Great Spirit. Who is God? The spiritual power. Has anybody ever seen him? No, they haven't seen him. We live more to our faith than some of them do today. I was christened a Catholic, but I know lots of things that they do, some of the priests do, that I wouldn't want to associate with. I've seen them so drunk that you had, the bellboy had to carry them upstairs in hotels.
Can you describe an Indian marriage?
The Indian ceremonials was more binding than today. You know, I laughed. You had to go down and get license. I had to get married. Well, you had to get license to run your automobile. You had to get license to go into business. And you had to pay dog license. And all. And the Indians didn't have those licenses. They had ceremonials, and the calumet with the pipe. And when they raised that to God, and it was placed in the lips of the girl's mother, the father's pipe, and then to the girl's father, and then to the boy's mother, and the girl and the boy's mother blowed their breath down through a bowl of pipe that blowed that smoke to the heaven above, and her father repeated the same as the boy's father. That was binding forever and until death. But today, they go down here, and if they ain't married by a minister, they're married by a justice of peace or a judge. They pay $10 and he slaps them on the back and God bless them. And they go home and 6 months later they go back to the very same judge. He don't slap them on the back, but he brings them up before the court. He says, in the name of our Lord and the said state and the said county, we grant you the degree of divorce. He turns and looks at the boy. He says, "You owe this court $50, young lady. If you ever want to try it over again, don't forget my name and number."
Were you ever involved in any wars against the white people?
No, I only the Spanish are white, the Spanish American War, that's the only one.
In burying the dead, why do the Indians place the things that belong to the dead in the graves?
Well, that's better than having a different misunderstanding and the hatred between brothers and sisters. And as some of them parks their cars today at the outside of the graveyard so they can run and get into that car and get to their home and grab up all the things that remains. We bury that because it belonged to he who died and not me who lived. And we didn't want any sorrow and misunderstanding between brothers and sisters and families over the things that belonged to the ones who had passed away. We do not die, you see. Our body goes to rest, but our soul goes on. If we die, why should we try to live to the commandments of God?
Why do most of the Indians return to the reservations after attending school?
Well, the United States government. They educate you and they send you back to the on the reservations. Thanks to General Miles and General Scott, they kept me from going back on the reservation. They were my friends. And many other Indians, Dr. Carlos Montezuma and Dr. Eastman, who was a dean of up at Amherst, up in Massachusetts, up and many of the other men that I, which made a success in life, they had someone who sponsored them and didn't return them back to the reservation. The Indians, you see, you wouldn't hire us, you wouldn't employ us, you're afraid of us. Somebody said, "Well, we'll steal from you, scalp from you, you'll scalp you," or something like that. And the Indian says, "Well, what's the use?" It was the Department of Indian Affairs is holding the Indians as ward to the government that returned the Indian girls and boys back to their reservations instead of, and when Mr. John Collier went into the Commissioner of Indian Affairs, he put the Indian Bureau in civil service. And then he gives the boys and girls an opportunity to go into the federal government as clerks on the railroad, mail clerks, and the girls and boys began to go out, and girls, many of them went to as nurses and teachers in the schools. But in the olden days, it was the fault of the federal government.
Did you ever get to meet Wovoka, the spirit ghost?
Oaxaca? Yeah, Oaxaca? No, I never, his right name was Jack Williams. No, Wilson, I mean. I never met him. That was, I was in Washington at the, no, I was going to school at the time of that. Just ready to graduate.
Could you tell us something about the ghost shirts?
The ghost shirts were the shirts that they wore in the ghost dance. The ghost dance was just a circle dance. And Oaxaca said it would turn the white man's bullets and stuff like that, but it never was used in war. The ghost dance wasn't for war. The ghost dance was to be peaceful and friendly and to live as neighbors with the whites.
Do you recall the agreement of 1876?
1876 was no agreement. 1868. Was a treaty.
The agreement where all the Indians were signing documents and they didn't know what it was about. They thought it was for free land and free food and there were nothing there, just the land the white people wanted to take away from the Indians.
That's a misunderstanding. It was no such a thing in 1876. Not my book. 1868. Was a treaty with Red Cloud and the United States government. But it wasn't signed that way, and all Indians ain't under one treaty. That's all wrong. Because we ain't the same people. See, the word Indian is artificial. There ain't no such a thing as an Indian in this country, only by name. By Columbus, when they landed on the island of San Salvador, they were Caribous. That's where your Karankaways around here came from. And then there were 58 different stocks of people in Europe that called them nations. And this over here, we were stocks. The Algonquins was the largest stock. They had 35 divisions. They reigned the New England states and Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and the Cheyennes and Arapahoes. The Cheyennes went to Montana and the Arapahoes went to Wyoming. Then the Abastin stock was on the Pacific coast, up in the New England, up in British Columbia, and also three groups in the United States. They were the Navajos, the Apaches, and the H-O-O-P-A, not the Hopi, H-O-P-I. Come in, Bertha. H-O-P-I is Hopi. H-O-O-P-A is Hoopi. They live in the Eureka Valley of California. Just like the Blackfoot, Black F-O-O-T, is the Kootenays. They belong to the same stock as the Flatheads. And those Indians there are at the Glacier Park in Montana at the Hardy Butte Indian Agency. The Black F-O-O-T is in Alberta and Saskatchewan, Canada. They belong to the S-I-O-U-A-N, Siouan stock, and then we belong to that, but we were called L-O-K-A-T-O-H, Lakota, which the white man calls Dakota. Anybody tells you that the All-Indian signed a treaty in 1868, that man's book is wrong.
Were your parents affected by the bill of 1889, the omnibus bill?
1889. No, my parents weren't affected by that.
Did you get to live in a teepee?
I was born in a teepee. Teepee is cleaner than a house. More air in it. And also, when your floors got dirty, you just moved on a new place of grass with lots of dirt in the people's floors. Is healthy. I lived in a teepee, used to up at my trading post up in Missouri for several years. I didn't need no air conditioning. It was cool, no flies or no mosquitoes. Everything buzzed around in it because the draft was drawn right out the top.
What about the food? What was the main dish?
Well, we had good food. Well, we gave you 80% of the foods that you eat. You eat this artificial stuff today. This instant this and instant that. Too lazy to cook. If you took the cold and freezing stuff away from the people, and 85% of them wouldn't have a biscuit. They wouldn't have no pies or stuff like that because they don't know how to cook today. We had plenty of good food. Look at the corn. We taught you how to make maize. We taught you how to make cornmeal. And all that stuff we taught the white man. The potato came from Peru, not from Ireland. The way it got the name Irish potato, the Indians on the island of Bruno gave to Sir Walter Raleigh the potato. He took it over to Ireland and planted it. In 10 years' time, they had more than they could eat, and they commercialized it in London, England, Scotland, Wales, and Holland, and when the people went into the stores to purchase that, they called it the Irish potato. The Indians in South America, lots of them, eat nothing but potatoes.
Did you all have any superstitions?
Every race has superstitions. Listen, you believe in Friday the 13th. It's unlucky. Now, let me tell you something about 13. The colony started 13 colonies. There are 13 stripes in our our flag. There were 13 stars in our flag once. There are 13 moons made a year, and there's 13 feathers in an eagle's tail.
Do you know any proverbs?
Oh, I know a lot of them, but I don't think about them. I think that's a lot of, as you said, foolishness.
What about some songs? Do you recall any songs?
Oh, yeah. That's the song of the rain dance.
In singing these songs, or your whatever songs you sing and dance, or chant, did you have any words to it, or you just chanted all the piece of music?
Chant, the rhythm of the drum, tom-tom, the rhythm of the shells, and then in 1893, Buffalo Bill adopted the bells so the public could hear the real rhythm of Indian dancers. They don't jump up in the air like in movies. It's time and beat. You see the real rhythm, the real time. Every dance had a meaning.
What is the difference between the Tatan Sioux and just plain Sioux?
There ain't no plain Sioux. Anybody tell you that, that's wrong. The Tetons, the Oglala, the Santees, the Hunkapapas, the Grovans, and they're all just a different division. One speaks with a La, we say La, quote, the Hunkapapa said, Duck Kota, the Santees and Yanktons and Sissetons said, Wak Kota. There ain't no
common
sense.
A lot of your book writers write fiction and not facts. They sit down and create their own ideas about lots of things, like the treaties of 1876 and the common Sioux and stuff like that. There's no such as the divisions. There's 10 divisions in the Sioux Nation.
Did you travel a lot with Buffalo Bill?
I was 15 years with him. I toured Europe with him, and I toured Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania.
Do you have any sons and daughters? If so, where were they born?
Yes, my son lives here, W.W. Red Fox. My daughter lives at Oyster Bay Cove, New York. Lots of people says, well, that's in history and all like that. Yeah, they have it's in history, the Battle of Bunker Hill. Now, go into research and find out if that was either Breed's or Bream's Ridge, northwest of Bunker Hill, but they couldn't see the monument from the North Depot of Boston, so they put it right up over Bunker Hill, right there at Charleston, Massachusetts, a suburb like Cambridge is, or Boston. And then what about William Dawes and Peyton? They got to John Hancock, but Paul Revere didn't. What made Paul Revere a hero? Longfellow's poem, listen here, children, to the midnight ride of Paul Revere. Go and research. Go up to Boston. Go to the Harvard and asked them up there, and they laugh at you when you said, well, there's where the Battle of Bunker's Hill was, point right out the door of one of the buildings at Harvard University, and they all laugh at you.
What do you plan to do? Do you plan to keep on making shows or what?
I don't make many shows anymore. I can't dance anymore. I'm going out to give the ladies a talk Wednesday a book club here, and then I'm going to be down at the museum Saturday. Then I have another appointment, and then I'll be with the Cub Scouts one day next, latter part of this month. And then I may go to New York and go on the TVs out on the Pacific Coast. And I have another book or two already wrote, so I had to get it put together, edited. I wrote all this stuff 30 years ago. Read what the newspapers said in my book. My paperback books are out now. They just come out.
Read what they say there.
In the back.
In the back.
No, the last thing, I think.
One more question. You mentioned something about the rain dance. Did those rain dances really worked out, or?
Write to the conservation department of Phoenix, Arizona, and ask them what they do. Sometimes they ask the Indians to stop it. It rains, so God never refuses. To have faith and not mockery, He'll answer your prayer. I make my peace every night and every day, looking to the heavens above. I don't have to have anybody to teach me right from wrong. I know when I do right or do wrong.
She's Red Fox, do you remember the Depression of 1894?
I should say I do. That was under Grover Cleveland. That's when Cox's army marched on Washington, D.C. They went up on rafts up the Ohio River from all over Kentucky and Indiana, and then the B&O Railroad put flat cars on a freight train and carried them into Washington. That was a pretty rough time, but everything was cheap then. Labor was cheap. You could buy a 150-pound hog already dressed for $5. You could buy a pound of lard for 6 cents. You could buy a dozen of eggs for 10 cents. You could go to work and buy a pair of shoes, better shoes then than they are today, for $2.50. A good shirt for 50 cents. A suit of clothes, $13.50. A Hofchef and Mark or a Kuppenheimer. And you could get a good meal for 25 cents. I pay down here at some of these places $3 for a seafood dinner, where you used to buy that in Baltimore, Norfolk, around through there for 35 cents. And living was cheap, $1 a day in a hotel. The highest rated hotels of Waldorf Astoria in Washington and the Astor, in New York, and the Astor Hotel, at $4 a day was their tops.
Do you recall the Depression of 1929?
Yes, but it was no depression for me. I made more money in 19 around there than I did later years. Oh, yes, I remember it. Herbert Hoover wasn't the fault of that. It wasn't the habit of depression. It's Wall Street. It's the speculators, the gamblers of Wall Street that arrest the man for shooting dice or playing poker, but still they allow him to pay $1,000 a year for a chair on the stock markets. And what is a stock market? It's a gamble. There was one presiding elder of a certain church lost $30,000 on the stock market playing of this church. I don't mention the denomination of the church in 1929.
Do you recall the war of 1910.
There was no war in 1910. Well, Ponce de Leon was, that wasn't a war amongst the United States. The United States, they had just rode into, out from Port Bliss, they rode a circle around it there, but they never fought the United States, and then, and Ponce de Leon didn't have no real battles. Carranza and Ponce de Leon was the ones that fought.
What about the war, World War One?
Well, I was 47 years old at the time, World War One. I wasn't in it. I sold Liberty Bonds, helped to recruit for that. These wars are all unnecessary. They have to have a war every 20 years to kill the population off and create jobs, because lots of the industrial plants is overstocked with material, the mills in the South and all over, and they have to create produce to put something to take care of all that. You figure out every 20 years there's a war.
Well, what do you think about World War II and Vietnam War?
Well, this what we're in now, we shouldn't be there. Which and shouldn't have been in Korea. You ought to go down to Virginia and go through the hospital there and see a lot of the boys that had their limbs frozen, their feet frozen off, and some of their hands frozen off. This is a shame. And the World War II was Hitler, and Japan. Well, the Japanese war was forced upon us. They declared war on us. We didn't declare war on Japan until they had that over in the Hawaii, over Pearl Harbor. They came and made the attack. And we saved France in the First World War. We saved France in the Second World War. We spent $1 billion for a military bases and naval bases in France, and then de Gaulle kicked us out.
In your opinion, Chief Red Fox, which war has been the most expensive one?
This what's going on right now.
Yeah.
You're saying that Vietnam, even though we have not declared war on Vietnam, has been the most expensive one?
That is not a declared war, but the materials, the cost of living, the salaries for the soldiers, the medical care, and everything is three times as much as it was in the First World War.
What do you consider the most important role in your life? Traveling or?
I received a better education than traveling than I did when I went to the University of Wisconsin.
I heard it at the school.
I said that might make the dean of your school angry.